Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm Dr. Elliot Berlin, hosting this episode together with my better half, prenatal psychologist, Dr. Alyssa Berlin. Our guest today is a writer, actress, brutally honest stand-up comedian, and she recently landed the mother of all supporting roles with the arrival of her baby boy, Jean Attell Fisher, after a challenging pregnancy with a condition called hyperemesis gravidarum. Amy Beth Schumer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I would say thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, that's true. We are at my place.
We're here at your joint.
That's right.
Let's start at the beginning. Where are you from? Right around here.
Yeah, I was born at Lenox Hill Hospital on the Upper East and then grew up mostly on Long Island and went to school in Baltimore and then made my way back to Manhattan.
Baltimore.
Oh, yeah.
What did you study?
Theater.
Oh, did you know early on that that's what you wanted to do?
Yeah. Yeah, I knew. I always knew. I played volleyball kind of seriously.
Ah, me too. So,
oh, okay, cool.
That's right.
Yeah. But, you know, it was volleyball and theater.
I was going to say volleyball to theater. That's an interesting jump.
Well, you did dance, volleyball and dance.
Sure. Amy, was there some dance mixed in there?
Only in my heart. No, but not. No one has ever encouraged my dancing, I'll say
that. Is theater in the family? Like, how did you get turned on to theater?
Music is, there's musicians in my family. My grandpa was a big trumpet player. And my grandma, they both met in the military. She was an aircraft engineer, and he was an aerial gunner, and they met doing Damn Yankees, which their unit was like putting on a play. I don't know.
So performers in the blood.
Yeah, there's some performing.
How are you with gunning?
Yeah.
It's not my main focus, I would say. Okay. Yeah.
Because there is gunning in the family.
Me too.
Was it always comedy for you?
I was doing plays when I was five.
Whoa.
And, at the dinner table? Or
No, I was doing like actual productions. I just wanted to perform, since I was little. And just always knew I was going to do that. I didn't have like a backup plan or anything. And my parents were really encouraging.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's unusual.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But they filled me with too much confidence, I would say. Because I think for anyone to make it as a comic or an actor, you have to be pretty delusional just because you have to fail for so long usually.
Whoa, yeah, you have to knock on so many doors and as if this is going to be the one.
This is it.
They slam it in your face.
So many false starts.
And do it again.
Right. Oh. Mm-hmm. And that's it. A lot of no's before you hear that one yes.
Yeah. And then that one yes doesn't actually matter. And you go back to the no. Yeah, it's a long process and statistically doesn't work out for a lot of people.
Talk about impact on self-esteem, self-identity.
It's true.
To have the wherewithal to take that all in and still pursue and go forward.
My parents really made me confident.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Sounds like they gave you a super tough shell.
What?
Sounds like they gave you a super tough shell.
That was life.
Life gave you a super tough shell.
Life gave me a super tough shell.
I want to know the secret of that great self-esteem.
From my parents?
Yeah.
They just really thought I was like amazing.
Well, you are.
Yeah. It turned out they were dead right.
They were right.
I just felt so loved in everything I would do, and they would give me attention, and I would want to put on shows and just tell stories, and they were, you know, god-awful. My dad filmed a lot of it.
Yeah.
He was big into home videos, and when we watched them, you know, they must have been just dying with how boring it was. But yeah.
No, you know what? Somehow when it's your kid,
you want to hear it.
It's just a different experience.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I don't know, but like the ninth magic show. It gets a little.
I hear
the
that.
Smiles gets a little harder.
But I agree with you. I think it is. It's that unconditional love that just takes you far.
I mean, I think it's every sports biography or whatever. It's always true. Like, let me guess, was your dad hard on you? Like it's, you know, so it can go either way. I was so like loved and encouraged by my parents. And I mean, we ran into major problems later, but just as a kid, I felt super.
It was good.
Sure.
I mean, it sounds weird because comedy especially usually is like tragedy plus time, but it sounds like...
No, there was a lot of tragedy.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. I mean, oh, God, yeah. Please. No, it
It'd
was...
be very hard.
Hit the fan. Excuse me.
No, I speak French.
It, you know, I had a lot of hardships and so did my family, but I always felt like I was more than enough for my parents, you know.
That's really sweet.
That's huge.
I mean, how did you, because theater is different than stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Did you train in stand-up comedy? Did you just go out there and try it one day?
I don't think there is training for stand-up. I guess there's some classes, but, you know, I majored in college and that's really a true waste of time. Yeah, I just think if you just read a lot of theater history books and some plays, and you do not need to go to college for theater.
I hear that. I totally hear that.
And, take note, kids.
Yeah, okay, guys, skip it. Skip those student loans for no reason. You know, reading.
That's a lot of money.
You know, we would spend like a day or a week on the different sort of methods, and I really liked Meisner.
Mm-hmm.
That was a technique, and so I studied at the William Esper Studio with William Esper, where you really get trained as an actor. And while I was starting there, I started stand-up and just trying it and open mics and shows where I had to bring audience members. And so my sort of training in both, happened at the same time.
And what was it about stand-up that captured your heart?
I just fell in love with it. Like, I really like to work hard, and the work ethic you need to have to succeed in stand-up is, you know, in a real kind of sustainable way, is it's real. It's, and, you know, jokes are almost like equations. And so to figure out the equation and then move on to the next one while maintaining that other one, it was just a formula and a process that I just fell in love with and got addicted to.
Right.
You have this also brilliant way of organizing your comedy so that you hit a topic hard, and then I think you're done with it, and you're just starting. Then it's like, we're going to up it up a notch. And that takes a lot of, like, almost playing chess with it.
Thanks, yeah. Yeah, it's like, I think that I learned that sort of technique from bombing. I mean, really, it's like people would not laugh and feel, I think, a little offended by a joke. And, you know, once you just hit bottom so much on stage, you stop feeling it,
right,
and you're not worried about it. And I think once you're more at ease, the audience is more at ease. So it became, you didn't like that, and that offended you. Well, this is a real punchline, which is so much more offensive than what you initially thought.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you're going to cry? I'm going to give you a reason to cry, exactly. Right? You're going to be offended? Mm-hmm. Well, let me help you out here.
Yeah.
Do you have, from live theaters, I love doing live theater. I was a drama major as well. And,
oh, cool.
I mean, my favorite parts of live theater are when things don't go right.
Of course. Because, nothing better.
Yeah, like there's no take two. You just really go with it and hope the audience doesn't realize.
Yeah.
Any major flops for you?
I mean, a lot, sure. And I love that stuff. And especially with stand-up, you're so allowed to address what's going on. To then now when I do any sort of a play or something, it's really hard not to. Like I still do. I did a Broadway show 2 years ago. It was a Steve Martin play, and I would just, in the middle of like a monologue, I would just turn to the guy in the front row and I'd be like, I can't believe you're eating peanut M&M's. I can't believe you're doing it. You know,
you break the wall.
I break the wall.
Oh, but that's great.
But it's, you know, if it were like a heavy, if it was like Angels in America, I don't think I would. But it's just like an hour comedy.
It lends itself better.
Yeah, I think it was part of the experience, I hope.
Yeah, no, people love being a part of it and being drawn in like that.
Yeah.
That guy went home a very happy man.
I don't know.
He's probably self-conscious about peanut M&M's.
Well, he should be.
He might be
the
over
front row.
Hello.
Yeah.
Seriously.
He's probably got something softer now.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you meet Chris?
He's a chef, and his sister was my assistant. And they're from Martha's Vineyard. And I was on the vineyard with my family, and we needed a chef. And my now sister-in-law was like, my brother's a chef, and we became just friends, just friendly, and I just thought he was so cute, and he's a chef, you know, and I was just like, this guy's probably, like, has curls around the block, and then I got to know him, and, like, maybe 6-7 months later, it was just clear we both liked each other, and we got together and have not looked back.
That's really sweet. How long has it been now?
We've been married about 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long were you together before you got married?
Like 6 months.
Oh, quick.
Right, the six, 7 months.
Wow, you really knew. Like, boom, this is it.
I'm 38, honey.
Oh. I hear you.
Yeah.
So that being said, did baby pick timing or did you pick baby?
Yeah, we were trying. We were trying for a couple months, like 3 months, you know. We got married February, March, April, May, June. I got pregnant 5 months after we were married. I was going to do this movie where I played a boxer.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't be, what?
Yeah, I'm just picturing the...
Yeah, so I was like, I can't be pregnant. So we were like, okay, well, I'll go back on birth control after I get my period this time. And I didn't get it.
Oh.
No boxing movie, huh?
No boxing movie, yeah.
Wow.
Pregnancy instead. How did you find out?
It was like, I really wasn't even thinking I may be pregnant. I had been being so mean to Chris. And we were actually at the Seinfeld's house. And he was going somewhere. And I was like, can you also get me a pregnancy test? It was just, I mean, really, it was like, did not think I was pregnant. I just like wasn't feeling good. And,
right.
And I took it. I didn't even tell him I'm going to take it. Like it wasn't, you know, I've taken them before. And yeah. And it lit
was
right
it
up.
One of those ones that says pregnant?
Or yeah.
Like, it says pregnant. No mistake.
Yeah. That's don't, it. You don't not have to like worry about the lines.
That's okay.
Yeah. Wait, actually, and then he had got more.
It's a two-pack.
And so we took, yeah. And so there were some lines. I kept those tests, which yeah. is kind of disgusting. And I went downstairs and I was like, Chris? And, you know, we just stared at each other like with our mouths open. Like we couldn't believe it. It was so exciting. And then just... We called our siblings and
oh, right
away.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, we called our siblings and actually I went to my gynecologist that day. Yeah. I mean, you know, I didn't know about the rules of like, don't tell anyone. I didn't know anything. So, you know, I would tell people and they'd be like, I don't think you're supposed to tell anyone yet.
Makes them uncomfortable because you're still in the woods.
I know.
But you know what? But you have the right idea because it's that first trimester that you need people.
Yeah.
So I don't know why we play the whole cloak and dagger dance.
It's so, true. I mean, mostly all of my friends have had a miscarriage. Mostly all of them. And they all have gone on to have children.
Yeah.
And so I do understand that being a part of it. But even with my gynecologist, it was kind of this like, don't get excited yet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Don't, you know, and that's, I don't know that, I mean, I'm sure that there's a method to that, but I was like, I'm just going to be excited and yeah.
Well, and here's the thing. I imagine those friends that had miscarriages, did they not lean on you when it happened?
They did.
That's what I'm saying. So we're quiet, you know, out of that concern of a miscarriage, but then we lean on people and we tell everyone
it's
after
true.
The fact.
So, yeah, so why not?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not done. So it seems a little shocking. Right. Most people waited months. Yeah. You waited minutes.
Yeah.
I think it probably wasn't totally dry yet.
Not even minutes. Oh, yeah.
But I
the line was still coming in. Right. I was just like, tweeting about it.
I love how nobody just does one test.
You can't do just
one. No, you got to do. Test. And there's no false positives.
Not when it's just pregnant.
Yeah. Right.
Which they didn't have those when we first started having kids.
Yeah.
And like those are a trip.
Oh, yeah. You're holding it up into the light. And then if you wait too long, it gets super dark, but it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Oh, now it's very clear.
But you know what? I think that in the birthing world, if we break a few more of those rules, we'll be in a better shape. A whole lot better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know it has comforted my friends who are having miscarriages that it does happen so much.
Right.
Because. Yeah. You know, you think is something wrong with me. You know, your mind just goes to the worst places. And it's like, this happens all the time.
For sure.
Was the couple of months that you were trying stressful for you? Or you just rolling with it?
No.
Just
no.
With it.
Yeah. I'd never been pregnant. And I thought something must be wrong with me. I mean, I've always been pretty good about birth control because I had really bad periods growing up. And so I was put on birth control like before I was even sexually active in like seventh grade. But there were times I wasn't on birth control but I never even had a scare. Yeah.
Which is awesome. Lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just assumed that I wouldn't be able to have kids because I'd never been pregnant before. And like all
so
of my friends
the other
have been
side
pregnant.
Of it. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out you did have a kid. We're
going
to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back to find out more about your pregnancy. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby. not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. We're talking to Amy Schumer. Let's jump to the bump. So when you decided you want to get pregnant, did you start to do a whole bunch of research about pregnancy? Did you have friends who were pregnant? Did you know what you're getting into?
We did no research and we just had sex.
So a little research.
Well, you went old school. I like it.
Yeah, no, we just we were like, let's just try by just having sex.
As opposed to...
I think we assumed... Well, I mean, I think we assumed because I was in my late 30s and I'd never been pregnant that maybe that we would need some assistance or something. But we were very, very lucky. And yeah.
And it's interesting. I find that the ones who are not expecting it, it happens really quickly. Yeah. And the ones who are like, oh, it's going to be a piece of cake, unfortunately ends up down a very different path.
Yeah.
When did you start having symptoms?
I think pretty quickly. Because, I mean, just being off birth control, I have since found out that I have endometriosis and adenomyosis. So being off birth control was really tough on my body.
Sure.
And so I was in pain. I was in a lot of pain. And I just...
Cramping pain?
Cramping and just kind of radiating, like just kind of pain like throughout my body. Hmm. And I just was emotionally just depressed for probably, you know, a couple weeks. And... was just taking it out on my husband and
how was Chris with everything?
He was great. I mean, with how awful my pregnancy was, he was basically my home attendant and had to keep me alive, and he handled it really well. We couples therapy, and she was incredibly helpful to us too. He's on the spectrum, and she's his psychologist. Sure. Who diagnosed him, and she's also our couples therapist, and she was just really helpful during the pregnancy. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, and without even knowing it, you were doing some prep work.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get to later.
Yeah, we were doing prep work, for parenthood and also our relationship. We wanted to take it seriously.
You had hyperemesis gravidarum, which is very different than quote-unquote morning sickness. And I think a lot of people don't know that there's a difference. When did you start feeling the nausea and vomiting? Did it come on slow or did it just hit you over the head?
I was feeling really good. Once I knew I was pregnant and that whatever the pain that I was feeling, I just didn't care. I was just excited and I was feeling pretty good. And then at 5 weeks... between 5 and 6 weeks, I had 3 days where I felt like I had the flu, but I didn't vomit. And then I think on the third or fourth day, I vomited and I was still pretty excited.
Sure.
You're throwing up because I'm pregnant.
And, that's right. The first one's very cute.
Yeah. We documented my pregnancy, which is going to come out on HBO.
Oh, you filmed it?
Yeah, we filmed it. And it's kind of sad looking at those clips because I didn't know what was about to happen to me.
Sure.
And then... that nausea that I felt at 5 weeks and vomiting lasted until the day that Gene came out.
Oh, wow. Every day you would throw up?
Yeah, I think in there I probably pieced all together. Maybe 10 days of my pregnancy I didn't throw up.
Multiple times per day?
Yeah.
So when you would throw up, do you feel better afterwards?
Not for long.
Just a little tiny bit of relief?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was... I'd never heard of it. And I was, they say first, okay, it's the first trimester. Just wait. And
that's what your doctor would say or friends?
Yeah. Anything I would read, they would say, oh, and my friends are like, you second trimester, you're going to feel amazing.
Golden.
And I was just waiting for this veil to lift.
Yeah.
And then it was 13 weeks and 14 and 15 and 16, and it was just like, and then I would have a day where I felt a little better. I was vomiting. We figured out that I had to get about 60 IVs while I was pregnant. You know, the dehydration was very painful. Not being able to keep anything down. I was eating things based on how I thought they would be to throw up.
I hear that.
Yeah.
Like on the way.
What will this be like when I throw it up?
No, because peanut I will M&Ms, throw it up.
No.
What did you find does taste better on the way out?
Soup is good, just, pureed soup.
Because it's the same?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, everything I threw up came out very much the same because it was usually pretty
wasn't
immediate.
Digested.
No. The worst thing I threw up was this kind of deep dish pizza. Anything bread, any heavily breaded things were just tuna melts experience.
Oh.
Just But it was it was really sad. And it's like, and I also just kept thinking about how lucky I was because A, it was temporary.
Sure.
So this isn't a chronic illness. This has an end date. And B, I have the resources to keep myself and my baby alive. It's like food poisoning for 9.5 months.
Sounds so awful. And there's,
it was so awful. Women lose their jobs, like 50% of women.
Well, that's it. You can't work. Totally.
Their marriages end.
Right.
And sorry if you already got this information, but up until not that long ago, because there's no research on it, they just thought women were being kind of hysterical.
Yes.
Oh, it's psychological.
That it was psychological and that it was for attention, that you didn't want the baby, that you wanted sympathy. And the way that they would handle it is not that long. In like the 60s and 70s, they just made the women sit in their own vomit. And they would...
In the hospitals?
Yeah, wait, in hospitals. Or psych wards and tell them to like snap out of it. And
That's awful. You know, when I posted on Instagram that I was going to do an episode on hyperemesis, the personal stories that came flooding in one after another after another, you could almost string the story together on how similar it is.
Yeah.
And how, you know, my husband didn't get it. My coworkers didn't get it. My boss didn't get it. My doctor didn't get it.
Yeah.
That it was not morning sickness.
Very few doctors have any understanding of it. And because there are so few studies, like almost no studies.
Right.
And we're going to do a follow-up episode with experts talking about what we do know and hopefully what we can learn moving forward. But just a couple of stats on it. 70 to 80% of women experience some kind of nausea and vomiting during pregnancy. 35% with clinical significance. And then 30% require time off from work. But only 1.5% of pregnant women suffer from hyperemesis gravidarum. So,
I bet it's more than that.
That's it. I'm sure.
It's not.
It's a small percentage of overall. And so there's some border where you cross over, but it's clearly a very different experience than throwing up in the morning and feeling better or just feeling nauseous periodically.
Or not just the first trimester.
Or just the first trimester. Did yours go all the way through?
Yeah, the last day.
Wow. And that's why I had a C-section. I opted for a C-section kind of the day.
That you could.
So the day of
39 weeks.
I went to 39 weeks.
And I said, that's it.
It's amazing. You know, what was the impact emotionally? Like, it's amazing that you were able to have the wherewithal within that to say, like, this is temporary. Because, again, it's a risk factor for, you know, perinatal mood and anxiety disorders.
Totally. Well, reading about the children who come from it are usually fine.
Right.
There's a risk of low birth. Like, there are these risks, but it's really just about the mom surviving.
Yeah.
And I tried every medication. Nothing worked at all.
I got no relief at all.
No relief. Nothing. From Teclagis, Zofran.
Acupuncture.
No. And I was doing everything. I was doing acupuncture.
Right.
I was doing everything I could. There are some studies that marijuana helps.
Sure.
And, you know, that's real controversial. But yes. I think that it's less risky than it is to take tons of medications, you know, so I support women who want to use
marijuana. Is it something you tried yourself?
No, I have really bad lungs, so I can't smoke anything, but there's the edible option.
Right.
So I would recommend women who have hyperemesis where, you know, for survival. There's, you know, there are no studies on marijuana.
That's the thing. People get nervous because
there's
no study.
And they'll never study it. That's right. So,
but then there's
that's
all
just
these...
my, that's my personal
belief. But
that's
belief. It. We need to first take it seriously that this is a real condition.
Yeah.
And then actually look at what we can do to help alleviate those symptoms.
I do not know how you live in New York City. Like, even me, every corner is like sausage and falafel and pretzels. Like, I get...
Oh, smells were... Yeah. It was so brutal. It's just... And I was on the road. I had a contract that I had to do these dates on the road. And so I wound up having to get rid of about half of them.
Sure.
How did you do the other half?
I vomited up until going on stage and then after. I never threw up on stage.
Thank God.
I threw up right before. I mean, there's video of me throwing up while they're saying my name.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm just trying to think, like, what goes through your head that morning? You got a show, you got an audience, and you feel like that.
Well, I felt pretty unapologetic about it. I was just like, I'm so sick. I'm going to do my best and hurl my body on stage. But traveling... It was totally traumatizing. And there's, I think it's probably almost 100% of women who get it, I get actual PTSD.
How do you not?
I don't know. I tried to keep my spirits up, and you know, I always make jokes about when things are tough, but and I knew it would end, but it was really, really hard. And I, a couple times just cried from feeling bad for myself. But other than that, I was out of my control. So I tried to not feel bad for myself and just kind of survive. But I mean, that's what other women with hyperemesis will say, just survive.
Sure.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, and we don't give enough credence to survival. Like in the animal kingdom, it doesn't matter if you were a fighter or a runner. If you survive to live another day, you were golden.
I want to survive. I want this baby to survive. Sure. And that was my focus.
Well, and it's interesting because in your Netflix special, which we both saw, which was amazing.
Thanks.
You growing. Kind
of, growing, you made a comparison to Megan. But really, it's you and Kate as like two of the more public people out there who struggled with hyperemesis.
Yeah. I was like, you know, you want to find articles, whatever I was looking for. I didn't see her like really speaking about it.
Right. I think they spoke more about her.
About, yeah, like other people knew.
Yeah, we're going to have to travel to London.
Go, guys. Go to Windsor.
Amy, come with. What do you mean?
All right. Yeah, just use my name. We'll get right in.
After all the things you said about her.
Mm-hmm. That was the queen. I like it.
Are there still foods you can't eat because of...
No.
You're back to turn
I mean, out? When the second gene was out of my body, it was gone.
It melts away.
And my friend had it, and she wrote me this email when I was in my third trimester, my friend Mandy, because she had had hyperemesis, and she said she just had her second baby, and that the joy, like the immediate relief that you feel if you have hyperemesis and then once the baby's out is, she said like she had just gone to CVS to buy like pads or something, and she felt like she was walking into her prom. Like it was just this, and I felt that too. You know, I had a fresh C-section, which had complications, and I just was so happy. I mean, other than just having a baby, which, you know, a couple of people told me the day you give birth is the best day of your life, and that was true for me. Right. But that relief, like, you know, like, oh, I was recovering from a C-section. I'm like, nothing will ever be, you know, it was torture.
How did your fans react? Were they supportive? Were they...
Like to me canceling dates or stuff. Yeah, people were pretty nice. They're just like, take care of yourself. This is bigger than that. And I mean, I was so like transparent. And the people who like me are most likely, you know, they're like 30s and above. And so they're going through stuff too, so.
But that's great that people can have perspective, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there were a couple. Oh, this is the second time you know. But because I tried to reschedule, like I would feel good for an hour and I'd be like, I'm out. Let's go. Yeah, right. Book me in Phoenix.
Yeah.
And it just,
you know. I would definitely not want to be that poor guy eating peanut M&Ms.
Yeah.
Front row.
Yeah.
With you having hyperemesis.
That's
true. And I was even thinking it's amazing that it melted away so quickly. Like I had severe nausea.
Yeah.
Through all of our pregnancies.
Yeah.
There are still certain dishes I can't look at that once had a food that made me nauseous.
Oh.
That carried over.
There's even songs.
There's different TV shows I would let the kids watch.
Kids will start singing the song. You're like,
wow.
It's wild.
Not happening.
No, it just was gone.
And like you said, like I could see how it could go both ways, where it's just like you're just dancing in there's the dancing. You're just dancing in the streets, so elated that part has passed.
Yeah.
And then there's the PTSD side of what you had just been through.
Yeah. I really, like, I don't know. And also people said, you'll forget. They would go, wait till you have your next one. You're going to forget. Everybody does it, and then they do it. And I'm like, I'm documenting it, so I'm not going to forget.
Right. That's right.
But I really remember it. But I just was so excited about Gene and to not feel nauseous anymore that it just stayed as elation. I definitely thought I was going to have...
Well, and something so cool that you did was it sounds like you gave yourself permission along the way to have those moments to break down and cry and to feel bad.
And to feel bad, even though I'm luckier than a lot of women.
But we need that realism because otherwise the body does just store it.
Mm-hmm. And, let it out. I did. And we went to therapy.
Right, which is huge.
I did Pilates the whole time.
Oh, wow.
I would go in and we lived in a couple different places while I was pregnant. They were renovating our apartment, which I don't know if you find that a lot of people do that. Like they just
want
that's the thing do, right?
The nest. You got to build up the nest.
Build the nest. So we lived in New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
For a couple months. We lived in Rhinebeck, New York. I was like going to go with the midwife at this birthing center. Just, you know, and it's like, that's why anytime now my friends are like, my birth plan. I'm like, get out of here with your birth plan.
Yeah, seriously.
You don't decide. Yeah, I don't know. We just kept the show on the road.
Hmm.
Right, a certain degree, what you have to do, right? Yeah. We just put one foot in front of the other and we That's survive.
It. Just survive. And yeah. Going to this Pilates studio in New Orleans, and this woman, she had two kids, and she was just getting me ready to give birth, you know, and just kept me moving, and I would That's throw awesome. Off, you know, there was a garbage right there, and I would, and it was so funny because you could tell she was a mom because I would throw up and there would be no like...
She wouldn't stop.
No, exactly. She wouldn't be like, okay, I'll see you tomorrow. You know, she that's would just right. be you like, okay, now you're here. Right. Yeah, and I was like, oh,
yeah. With a core knows. Like that, you probably have some very efficient throwing up skills.
Oh, I'm great. Yeah. I can.
Especially on the road. I mean, and the bag in the car.
What's funny is like how calm, you know, you know, it's like when you're throwing up so much, I'd be like, I'm going to throw up. Yeah, like I've got about 30 seconds.
Yeah. Like, for me, it's so violent if I throw up, but the kids, they just open their mouth and spew and keep going.
Yeah. They were both pretty violent. Yeah. And then also they say over 80% chance that, you know, you'll have it again.
Okay.
80% chance. Over 80.
Let's take another little break.
Sure.
And we'll talk about your birth and postpartum experience. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. We're talking to Amy Schumer. So you mentioned for a minute talking about midwives and possibly out-of-hospital births.
Right.
What kind of research did you do there? Was it any books you read, documentaries you watched, an amazing podcast that you might have listened to?
You got me through. You held my hand through this pregnancy.
Oh, yeah.
I Expecting Better by
Emily Oster.
By Emily Oster. So that was really helpful to me. That just tells you, you know, she's an economist and she just like kind of gives you the actual studies that have been done rather than just going off of sort of folklore.
Right, real data.
Yeah.
So just saying, no, you can't do this. You can't
right. No, it was like this is fine. There's never been anything or, you know, but also realistic. You know, she's like, don't like eat oysters every day.
Every other day, but
yeah. Yeah, that's fine. And, just talk to everybody who's ever had a kid. And then we had a doula early on who I knew I wanted a doula.
For labor
and maybe after.
Sure.
And, so Domino Kirk
is your doula?
Was my doula. Mm. And she was amazing. She has a
carriage house.
Yeah. That's
her. I knew that name was familiar.
Yeah. She has some partners. That's And yeah, like I just couldn't recommend more that. Like, I just think every woman who has the option of having a doula, it's such a huge thing. It's just, you know, to have an advocate who's been in there so many times rather than you've never given birth before.
That's right.
You don't know how to sort of speak up for yourself.
That's right. Or what to even speak up about.
Yeah. And she just comforted me. It's just somebody who kind of helps tell you how it might go down. And she was just kind of running us through the options. And I right away like was thinking, I think I'm just going to have a C-section and at Lenox Hill. And that's what I was feeling like I was going to do. And I've had so many friends who've been induced. They've waited. They've been over. They induced. Nothing happens. And they wind up with these 36 to 48 hour sort of nightmares where they get a C-section at the end anyway.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The war scars on all sides.
Mm-hmm. So I just thought I was going to get a C-section. And then just talking to different people, you know, everyone's like, I'm not giving you advice. I'm not pressuring you. But really, everywhere I turned, people were like, you should try and get as much labor as possible. An epidural is fine, but it'll slow it down. And if you can, the best thing for you would be as natural as possible and with a midwife and breastfeeding. And that just kind of got in my head. And I was like, all right, let's try this. And so we moved up to Rhinebeck, New York, and we're living near this birthing center and got a midwife. And we were doing it that way. And so kind of no more gynecological appointments in the third trimester. And
was there a contrast for you on medical model versus midwific model?
I think just in practice, it's like, you know, the midwife measures your belly. So it's, you know, no sonograms. They can check out your cervix if you want. And they'll feel for where the head is. You know, it's just different.
A little more hands-on?
Definitely more hands-on. And for me, I didn't love that, actually. I didn't like it. Everything hurt anyway. So for somebody to be sort of digging into your abdomen. Like, here's the head. You know, it's like, oh, okay. I can just know where it is. And, you know, very practical. And you could tell it's like, it's tough to get things through to women who are pregnant in terms of when you're going to have some contractions and they might not be the thing. And, you know, the encouragement of like, don't go to the hospital the second you have your first contraction. And, you know, just the advice of you'll know when you're in labor. And it was hard for me because I was so sick and dehydrated and I was having contractions at 30 weeks.
That's it. Your muscles were probably so twitchy.
They were just twitchy. Yeah. And, and then I just got to the point where I was so, so sick. And it just felt risky to me. And even though the birthing center has an operating room and they have, it's in there.
Unique, yeah.
They had doctors at the ready if you need a C-section or anything. But my instincts were just like, no, I want to go back to Manhattan.
Right, you came back to the city.
Came back to the city. And like a couple days later, went into Lenox Hill. And I was going to be induced when I was 39 weeks. And I was talking to my acupuncturist, whatever. I was just like, I know I'm going to wind up needing a C-section. And I did get a C-section. And when they opened me up, you know, saw that I had adenomyosis, like I have really bad endometriosis. And they were kind of amazed that I was even able to carry a baby. I think anybody who, if they had opened me up before, because I considered getting a laparoscopy or, you know, because the only way you really know if you have endometriosis, they have to open you up.
You have to look inside.
You gotta look. Right. And so I just opted to not do that. And I was just like, oh, I'll just go back on birth control. But
you felt like you're going to end up in
a cesarean. Yeah. And so what they found was that I would no question have had to have a C-section.
Anyway.
And so I was really glad that I opted for that.
So you ended up skipping the induction and went straight for
totally.
The...
Totally. Yeah. Skipped the induction, went right for the C-section.
What was it like for you?
It was a rainy Sunday and I woke up vomiting and was like the sickest I've been the whole time.
So you were ready.
And I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I was so big and I was so miserable and couldn't keep anything down. And my acupuncturist came over that morning. We just talked. You know, we've been working together for like 10 years.
Sure.
Her name is Vicky Lee. And she was like, I think you should just have a C-section.
It's time.
And I was like, okay. And then I talked to my friend Amber Tamblyn, who had a C-section. And she told me things that she wished she'd been told, which were that Chris wouldn't be in the room with me while they did the actual cutting, that it would just be...
Is that really? A for sure thing in New York?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not a given.
Would you have wanted him there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was happy knowing that he wasn't there.
Beforehand.
The doula and Chris, like, I was in there for about 45 minutes before they came in, that when they give you the anesthesia...
The epidural?
Yeah, the epidural, that you'll get really cold.
Right.
And you'll be shaking. And I was really glad I knew that so I didn't panic. And I was throwing up through the whole first hour of my C-section. Oh, it's supposed to take about an hour and a half or something. Mine took over 3 hours because of my endometriosis.
What they found inside?
Yeah. And that was really scary. The anesthesiologist got off his shift in the middle of my C-section. So I knew like there was a shift changeover. And that was scary.
Yeah.
And... my sister was there, my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law. You know, they were there before I went in. Then I went in and then Chris and my doula were in there standing around my head. And they, you know, Chris knew not to look over the curtain.
Yeah.
Well, so you had a lot of people as they were bringing the baby out.
As they're bringing the baby out, I had Chris and I had my doula.
Oh, right, nice.
In the room.
Yeah, I'm so glad you spoke to your friend beforehand.
Having me too.
That awareness of what to expect.
Yep. That was really good info. And even like, you know, like laying there with... the epidural and vomiting, it's, you know, turning your head, like it was really hard, but I was glad I knew that was a possibility. But the thing was, you know, she told me and like how quickly it happens, you know, and that's what's cool too. But for me, it took a lot longer and I was starting to get worried because it was taking so long, but it was because of my endometriosis.
Did they do things surgically to treat your endometriosis at the same time?
Wouldn't that have been cool?
It was just working around it.
I'm like, did you get anything out of there? And I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way. Because, you know, your uterus is supposed to contract after you have the baby, but mine didn't at all.
It was
really globular, and they had to get it back in there, and it was kind of brutal. Yeah, that was scary, but Chris was so great. Yeah, we just stared in each other's eyes, and like he just kind of held me there. Yeah, and then they let me hold Gene for a good amount of time. Like, you know, I got to see him and hold him, but then then they gave him back to me after they did everything they needed to do. Well, because I was like, that's great. For so long. Yeah.
And so later that day, your nausea went away?
Oh, immediately.
Like right away.
Yeah.
Sounds like an hour in, it stopped.
As soon as he was out.
Yeah.
So incredible.
It was gone, and I felt it. I felt
and
it
go away.
And you felt
that change.
Yeah. And there are theories that have not been substantiated, but that it's probably the placenta.
Right.
Something with the placenta. That's.
I was reading that also.
We got to do more. We have to know.
Had you picked out the name beforehand?
Jean was my husband's mom's name who passed away.
Oh.
Yeah. Spelled differently, but that's where we got Jean from.
That's really special.
Yeah.
Sounds like Jean.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Sounds the same.
Mm-hmm. I actually have a video. My doula took pictures, and she took pictures over the curtain. And so she didn't even know she did this, but it's one of those things where when you hold down the picture, you can see the second they took him out of me.
Right. It's like that moving Harry Potter picture now.
Yeah, exactly.
Do they offer you a clear drape? Because they do that now sometimes.
Yeah. Do they really?
Yeah.
Ready?
Would you have
Okay, ready? Is that crazy?
Oh my gosh, Amy, that's amazing.
Isn't it cool to have that?
Yeah.
It made me feel really powerful just to see.
It kind of looks like a movie.
Yeah.
Somehow.
And you are powerful. Look what you did to bring him into this world.
I'm a warrior.
You are. Absolutely.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. And it made me just feel like all women are. And people being like, oh my God, how could you work during that? And it's like, you would do the same thing. It's like we would all.
That's it. That was your first act of motherhood.
Actually, and they told my sister, like, they were like, okay, we're wheeling her out. She's on pain meds now, so she's probably going to be out of it. She won't sound like herself. And then you hear me coming down the hall, and I'm like, men can't do shit. Women can do everything. Women are warriors.
It's true. I always said if men had the babies, then houses would be cheaper.
Yeah. Because you'd only have one baby.
There'd be a lot less people roaming around. How was your recovery from the cesarean and, in general, the postpartum period for you?
It was scary. I mean, it hurt. There's like very little sympathy for, not within my own home, but just I think for people in general, because again, it's a temporary thing. I don't know. It's like you're going to recover, you know, so other people who've even had a C-section, I get it. Like right now, if somebody was like, I had a C-section like 2 days ago, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. But it is temporary, you know, but it's a really big deal.
It's a big crazy
surgery.
Well, and I think it's wild because we do so much as a society when we see a pregnant woman. Like, we'll get up and we'll open doors and we'll come out of the woodworks. But it's like, once the baby's out, it's like, dude, you're on your own.
Yeah, you did it. Now you're garbage.
And the fact that you've just been through major abdominal surgery doesn't seem to weigh in. And I don't know why.
You know, just trying to, the first 3 months, it was just like trying to get our footing and figure it out. And, you know, like just tons of guilt and joy and emotions. I was just an open wound.
Every emotion.
3 months at least. And also it's hard. And something I would advise people is don't have people over. Because you're even like people who, you know, really care about you, whatever, like they want to see the baby. But what that means is that you essentially are hosting a party.
Right.
You know, they come over, you go, do you want a drink? Do you want, you know, oh yeah, I'll have a coffee. You know, and you're like, I just had a C-section. And why am I making someone coffee?
No. Mm-hmm. Right. That's backwards.
So I would just limit it to like no one. You know, the smallest amount of people the first 3 months for health and for your own sanity.
And you're 100% right. I mean, my big platform is reclaiming postpartum and recognizing it as a transition and its own entity.
Right.
That has its own rules and
the
rituals.
Fourth trimester.
For sure.
Yeah.
And that recognition that people who come over are only helpful if they're there to take care of you.
Yeah, only come over if you're here to
100%.
Help. And Chris being a chef and he read First 40 Days and all these, is it Ina May?
The First 40 Days, that's Han, right?
Oh, yeah.
But all these other books, and he just made really nourishing bone broths and soups.
Oh, that's incredible.
Rock star.
Yeah, and I just got myself better and just relaxed and really tried to rest and take care of myself. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to have a baby nurse, had somebody here 24 hours a day, which...
Huge.
That's just the biggest gift of... I don't understand how, unless you've been doing it... To know how to give your baby a bath, to know that the umbilical cord is going to fall off on its own. Just all these things that you just, it's just, here's your baby, bye. That's right. I just felt very supported because I'm lucky because of my resources.
I think that when people have nausea and vomiting all through pregnancy, mm-hmm. it plays with your emotions hardcore.
Yeah.
And so it sets you up for having a potentially more difficult postpartum emotionally as well.
Oh.
But it sounds like you put in place a lot of support. Like you married
I the really chef. I married a chef.
Helpful.
I had a...
Is it too late?
Our doula was around like a couple weeks after. And, you know, when I was pumping... You know, sure. I wanted him to get the colostrum and then...
Pumping instead of breastfeeding?
Yeah, yeah. I had a we had a lactation expert come over and whatever. He didn't latch and I just didn't feel that push to make that happen. And then, you know, I pumped for like, I don't know, like the first month or something.
Part of the warrior you to do that.
Yeah, and then I was like, not for me.
Right.
This is not for me and I didn't want to do it and... And we're giving him Similac. And then actually Serena Williams kind of yelled at me and was like, there's a lot of sugar in that. And even though, you know, it's great and he was meeting his milestones on Similac, we switched him to Holly, H-O-L-L-E,
which European.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Just has some less sugar. And, you know, he did great on that. And so I really encourage women to, there's so much pressure to breastfeed, but really it's all in your head.
Well, and society and cultural, but I'm so proud of you because I joke that my first book is going to be called You're More Than a Pair of Boobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for moms to know that being a mom
and
a happy, healthy mom.
Mm-hmm. And some people like absolutely love it and I'm so happy for them.
Sure.
And I just, it was bumming me out.
Right.
But then I was also like kind of proud doing it and whatever and getting him the milk and stuff. And then once it occurred to me that I could stop, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to stop.
Yes.
And then, yeah. And then, you know, every week what I did was just took away one session of the pumping. So.
Because you matter.
Yeah. Because you matter. And it's going to be better for your baby. That 100%. You're okay. And I just, and I feel really lucky that me not getting postpartum and not having this like dark period was also, I just think if I didn't have all the help and support, if I didn't, you know, I had someone here teaching us and Chris and. And he was an easy little infant. And I think, and having a doula, you know, I just, yeah.
And it's a little village.
I had a village. And it also, I felt so lucky. And Chrissy Turlington has this charity, Every Mother Counts.
Mm-hmm.
And they help underserved women have a birthing expert with them when they give birth. Because a lot of women don't have any sort of even medical professional.
No way.
Yeah. And so... I've been feeling good about giving back through that. And we're creating an anthology of birth stories. You guys have to be involved. And all the money goes to Every Mother Counts. But yeah. All these celebrities and all different, you know, women from all walks of life are doing it. So
that's great. No, we would
love
that.
Yeah.
I think there's a tremendous amount of judgment about all the, I don't know why, but during pregnancy, during postpartum, about, you know, how you give birth, where you give birth,
yeah.
How you feed your baby. And there's, that's just the beginning, all these mommy new wars. Things. Yeah, mommy wars for some reason. And I just love that you kind of listen to the voice inside you and honored that voice and
thanks.
Just made your own decision.
Yeah, really it is cool. Like has to be a conscious decision because there is so much pressure on you. Also, the questions people ask, like people are so invasive while you're pregnant. What's your plan? Are you 100%. Breastfeeding? But that's so personal and none of anyone's business. And I now, when I see a pregnant woman, like I just don't ask her anything.
Right.
I'm just like, congratulations. I'm so excited for you. And that's the best. It.
Yeah. Right. If she wants to share, she will.
Go ahead. Ask anything. I'll tell you anything, but I'm not going to.
I mean, I'm going to write a book for dads called You're More Than Just a Pair of Man Boobs.
Oh.
Yeah.
That
it could be the sequel.
Absolutely. There's a high demand for that.
His and hers.
Well, and you know, you doing you paves a way and gives people permission that's allowed.
The whole generation was raised on formula. Yeah.
And informed
choice. And the studies
choice.
Aren't, they're not so black and white that.
No, formulas, you know, evolved a lot over the years.
Right.
And yeah, there's pros and cons to both.
Totally. What in this world is as black and white as we pretend it to be?
Just the cookie.
Yeah.
Just the cookie.
Only that cookie.
No, but informed choice. Like, mm-hmm. again, it's your body. And
right.
we come back to this notion that baby wants a healthy, happy mom more than anything.
Yeah.
And everyone's going to find that in a different path.
Mm-hmm.
So you do your homework and then you do what feels right for
it.
Your family.
And I, for the first 3 months, didn't work and was just... with the baby and that was a really beautiful time. And then I went back to work and I shot a movie And I was really nervous about going back to work. I couldn't imagine that I was going to leave the house, like, and only see him for a certain, and the fear was worse than it was in practice.
Oh, as really? It usually is.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were some moments where I felt physically ill, you know, being away from him and, like, you know, feeling sad I didn't see him enough. That
wow, 3 months. I don't think I had lost the baby weight yet. I don't think I could have been on camera.
I haven't lost the college weight. no, it wasn't.
You guys are a good pair.
Yeah.
No, I insisted on getting pregnant again before I lost the weight from the first one.
Well, then that's on you.
That's hey, on listen. You, baby.
But going back to work, it was something that I talked to a lot of my friends, and everyone's like, it sucks, but it's also empowering, and it's good to go back to feeling like a person. And I've really enjoyed it. And I don't think I would be able to sustain just being with him without working and feeling happy for
right.
that long.
And yeah. how nice that you have those options.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you?
Different kinds of satisfaction.
Yeah.
What's coming next from Amy Schumer?
Well, we have our podcast on Spotify, mm-hmm. Three Girls, One Keith.
Three Girls, One Keith.
And
you have your birth doc.
I got a birth doc coming out on HBO Max.
Is there a name for it?
Expecting Amy?
No.
Yeah. And
appropriate.
Yeah. And then I just started production on TV show for Hulu.
Oh.
Pre-production. We're writing it. So starring, directing, writing it.
So comedy. When you jump into work, comedy. You yeah. jump into work.
Yeah, yeah, like, I don't really mess around.
I
yeah.
see that.
Yeah.
And then a movie. What book. Was the movie?
The movie's called The Humans, and it was a play on Broadway, and they turned it into a movie. And so that'll be out next year.
That's
that was a good time for that movie. It's more of a drama. So.
Drama with comedy?
There's some laughs, but it's pretty dramatic, yeah.
I just watch cable news for that drama.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's why I love
There's
that you make comedy
yeah.
all the time.
Well, my shows are both.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, we'll be able to get our Amy fix
yeah.
in the coming year.
No problem with that.
I'm really grateful for you that you joined us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having this podcast.
And that you shared your personal story. And I know that you did it to be able to help other people with hyperemesis. And it is so poorly understood and under-supported. So we will do a follow-up episode. And I'm going to keep on top of it. Just see
Thank
where
you.
We can push,
me too.
Push the spotlight.
Yeah.
And try to get help for people who are struggling with it now and see if we can do better in the future. At home, thanks for listening to our podcast. For more trendy pregnancy and parenting media, visit us at informpregnancy.com or on Instagram at Dr. Berlin, DocTorBerlin.
I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.